Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
And in the second half, we have UFC legend George St. Pierre, who's really philosophical and a really interesting guy. Pretty proud of this interview, so I hope you enjoy it. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Federal laws limit liability on credit card fraud, but there aren't the same safeguards for your retirement account. Protect it with two-factor authentication. Consolidate plans, update your password, and check your account frequently. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet. In an instant, cybercriminals could harm your finances and your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number, for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they will send you an alert. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours, yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code ADAM. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code ADAM for 25% off. Adam Carolla fans, you asked and we listened. Now is your chance to smell Adam's balls. Smell Adam's balls. With his new scented candle. It's the perfect Father's Day gift. A limited edition. This smells like my balls. Adam Carolla candle. There are less than 100 left, so get yours now. Only $35. And right now, you can get free shipping with any order over $100. So check out all we have to offer at AdamCarolla.com. Bougie Parfum Le Corolla's Balls. Smell Adam's Balls. Order yours now at AdamCarolla.com.
All right, I'm here with UFC legend and soon to be acting legend, George St. Pierre. I'm a big fan, George. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you.
I followed your career. I'm a big UFC fan. I'll just get our audience caught up a little on George. UFC record, 26 wins, 8 KOs, 6 submissions, only 2 losses. And that's a big deal. It's 26-2 as a boxer is pretty damn respectable. But in the UFC, you know, I've said it before, you have guys like Tito Ortiz and they're legends, and Chuck Liddell and they're legends. And, you know, those guys are 16-11 or something. I mean, the UFC is not boxing.
Yeah, the difference is in boxing, it's... they try to build up someone, the athlete records, you know, so they right. try to make him undefeated. So most of the time, an athlete in boxing will fight guys that are not at his level in the beginning of his career.
Tomato cans. They
yeah,
call
let's
them.
Say it like it is. But
yeah, so a boxer, if you shepherd him correctly, you can get him to 20-0,
absolutely,
and he's fought nobody with over a 500 record, meaning, you know, everyone he's fought is 12-19.
That's right. So in MMA, it's a different story. Like my first fight ever was in Canada, was against a guy who was 4-0 at the time.
Right.
So you're always evenly matched most of the time with someone that as a similar record than yours.
Right.
So the chance of failure are much bigger.
And there's so many ways to lose. I mean, if you're a boxer and you're just clearly a higher skilled boxer than your opponent, then you know, there's a 90% chance you're going to win that fight. But UFC, one takedown and it could all be over. Or
that's
one
right.
just crazy elbow, it could all be over. So the fact that you could put together 26-2 is pretty damn amazing. Also, UFC records, most wins in the UFC welterweight division at 19, most wins in the UFC welterweight title fights, 12. And above, I think there's a couple other guys like Demetrius Johnson and John Jones that are, you know, again, perennial all-stars in that group. So, and also, I should give a plug to the acting side, which is The Falcon and The Winter Soldier. 6 episodes, all 6 episodes available now on Disney Plus is where you can find that. And we'll get into the acting, but first we'll just go back with you. So you grew up in outside of Quebec?
Yes, I grew up in a countryside, small town of Saint-Isidore. And I'm very lucky because a few days ago they made a monument like Rocky Balboa. You know, they made a statue.
Really?
Like, yeah, yeah, like a real size statue of me. Of me, and they put it in the in I would say the city center. It's not a city; it's a town of 3,000 people. So, but they put it out there so people can go there and take picture of me. It's like a real statue of me, like real size in fighting stance.
Wow, so, we're looking at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In bronze. So so I was very touched by that because when you're fighting, you always fight for a legacy. And when you get older, I'm 40 years old now, and you start thinking, is like, how can I leave my mark? You know, I mean, not in a selfish way, but in a way that how can I do something to inspire people? And this tattoo, if it's well taken care, it will be there before after I die.
Wow.
So perhaps it will inspire a generation, and you know, make them think that a little guy from that town made it out against all odds, and hopefully it will work out.
I don't want to rain on your parade, but if I know our society in Canada, a bunch of well-wishing 19-year-old college students are going to find it problematic in 4 years and demand it be taken down. So enjoy it. Enjoy it while you can. So for you, you start off small town, as far away from the limelight and the UFC and professional fighting as you can get. I know your dad, I think, trained in karate.
Yeah.
Early on, eventually you move on to a karate coach, and then yeah, you start to diversify into grappling and boxing and everything else. So was it something you were kind of, I mean, you're right about the age. So a lot of guys you talk to that are older were sort of like, the UFC didn't exist mm-hmm. when I was in high school playing football or yeah, whatever it was. But you're about the age where it kind of existed. Well, when you were younger.
It started when I was a teenager. But at first I've started karate because at school I was victim of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of trouble at school. Instead of focusing on what the teacher was explaining in front of the class, I was mostly focusing on how I'm going to get out of the room, get to my locker, pick up my book, and reach the bus before I get beat up. So
why was that, do you think?
I think it was circumstances. In my school, I'm from a little town, but we had, I remember, a program that was for a delinquent teenager at the time. And most of these kids that was part of that program were much older than the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my friends, when I grew up, are more intellectual person. I'm an athlete, but most of my friends are intellectual person. So when you're at school and you hang out with not cool people, you're not a cool person, you know. And I think it creates a lot of friction because I always been very proud. Mm-hmm. And very often my friend was getting picked on, and I was the one, because I'm more athletic than a lot of them, I was trying to defend them, and it got me in trouble. So I first start karate as a self-defense. Then the self-defense became a passion because quickly it was the place where I felt that I did something great, you know, because I wasn't good at school at the time because of I was not focusing on the right thing. And the only place where I could feel good and it mentally make me feel like I had value, it was in karate. So I became very good at it and start collecting medal. And so it became a passion, and the passion later on became a business. And, you know, that's how it started.
So, you know, people don't talk about it enough. It's important for kids to be good at something. It doesn't have to be school.
That's right.
Could be the violin, could be karate, could be any sport. Because I was the same. I was a horrible student, and it's kind of interesting in that when you're a kid and you're a horrible student, it just means you spend 8 hours a day in the place that you're horrible.
Yeah.
Which is like saying, I'm a horrible swimmer, and they go, well, you spend 8 hours a day in a swimming pool.
Yeah.
Like how's that? What's that going to do to your psyche? See, when you get older, if you're bad at stuff, you just stay away from it. And you don't go there.
I agree with you. And I think also the system is not made for everybody. For my personal experience, I was someone that had big deficit of attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I cannot stay locked on something for a long period of time. I need to get out and come back in. My brain is going fast. So I need, you know, like when you read a book, I remember I read a book about the Wright brothers. I wanted to know how they start to think about how to make a plane, you know?
Right.
And when the I remember reading the book, when it started, it's like, by a beautiful day of May, the clothes was hanging on, like, this bothers me because that's not why I read the book. I want to have information. Then later in the book, it tells you that they found a pigeon that is dead. They put electrode in and they see the wing going back and forth. And that's information. So at school, it's like the book. There's a lot of things that you can scratch and go straight to the point. And for me, I had a deficit of attention and I was bullied on top of that. So it was hard for me to focus, you know? So it's a different, this system is not made for everybody.
No, it isn't. Certainly not made for us. But, you know, it's interesting because I used to be a boxing coach and I did some boxing and I realized, so you were saying, you know, you would open a book and your mind would immediately wander. But boxing, martial arts, all the disciplines you're disciplined in, it's about relentless repetition.
Yeah.
So it's sort of super boring in its own way. You start and you jump rope for 15 minutes. That's you just standing there looking in the mirror and skipping rope. And, you know, you hit the heavy bag or the speed bag or the double-ended bag or whatever there. Or you just shadow box for four rounds or something like that. And it's all pretty relentless in terms of its repetition. It's just do the same motions over and over again. But you could do that. You could discipline yourself for that because your mind could go somewhere while your body was doing the repetition?
No, because it's straight to the point. There's no things that I needed to scratch, sort if I make an analogy. Everything I do, I know it will serve me well. And when you drill, what people don't realize is you drill stuff so many times. The reason why you're doing this is if you're facing a real life-threatening situation or a fight, for example, you do not have time to think and analyze. You are on what I call autopilot,
right?
Cruise control. And you will react accordingly of what you've been doing in training and repetition and repetition. So I remember when I fight, people like ask me all the time, like, what goes through your head? Nothing goes through my head. If something goes through my head and I start thinking, I could zig when I should have zagged. My reaction time won't be fast enough, and that's very dangerous. So you're on cruise control,
right?
My brain is already programmed because of the thousands and thousands of repetition I've done in my training to react to certain situations.
Right. So it's all about reacting versus contemplating.
That's right.
Something. And so you need your brain in kind of a neutral position, sort of. I always kind of describe it like if you play baseball, if you play center field, just being neutral because you don't know if you're going backward or forward or right or left. Just be. Don't be thinking about going forward because the ball may be hit over your head.
And the thing when you're performing, you have a lot of distraction. That's why some athletes, they can't pull the trigger when they have a lot of pressure on their shoulders. That's what makes the champion. That's what makes sometimes the difference between a contender and a champion, because the pressure. And a lot of athletes are very good in the gym, but when they go to compete for real, it's a different ball game. The reason why is then they cannot enter that zone of cruise control, because there's so much distraction that comes into play that they cannot, they start thinking about other things that are irrelevant.
Right.
Instead of just letting themselves go and trust their instinct.
Yeah, I think you could probably take any champion, and you could do it in tennis or boxing or MMA. You have to be able to not get caught up in what's going on. It's always used to describe it to my students. It's like you got pushed off the back of a boat. If you start panicking, you drown.
That's right.
Immediately. So you have to somehow go, I'm floating in the middle of the ocean, but I'm not going to react to it by flailing my arms around. I think a lot of that's repetition and training, but a lot of it's just kind of God-given wiring. like not to be agitated. I'll give you an example, and you can tell me who you are. If you take three people and you stand them out on the street corner with their backs turned to the street and a car goes by and backfires, most of them will jump. But one out of every 10 of them doesn't move. And maybe that's the wiring you need for for that. I was in, and it's also a kind of a, you have to process it. I was eating dinner the other night and the plate fell off the table, made a huge crash and broke in a million pieces on the floor. And I didn't move. Like I didn't do it. Everyone else moved. And then someone said to me, why didn't you jump? And I was like, I don't know. Why should I? What's that have to do with the plate? Were you with the backfire thing? Will you hop if there's a backfire?
It's a good question. I think it has to do with perhaps is there's a genetic component and there is also a social environment component.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I did what I did in terms of my career, why I'm a fighter, perhaps has to do with the genetic and also a social environment. Like you said, certain people react differently. I believe there is a cause to everything. I mean, now it's very philosophical. I believe in causality and cause and effect. That's what I believe personally.
Mm-hmm.
Because in fighting, we studied a lot of fighter. And I know when I'm fighting a guy, because I've studied him so much, I know that if I do something, I give him a certain stimuli to react to something, and he does, I can predict the future. So because of the cause, there is a reaction to an action. I believe that's how life is. We don't always understand the cause, what makes something happening, but I believe there's always a cause. And by definition, if there is a cause, I wonder if there's free will in a way. It's a very hard thing to understand, but man, I don't know.
Well, when you're walking to the octagon and the stadium or the arena's full and there's lights everywhere and music and it's one big distraction.
Yeah.
Are you just going into a sort of a calm zone? Do you have a mantra? Are you trying to keep it out? Or are you just sort of who you are and where you are?
I believe one of the reason why I was able to deal with that pressure very well, it's because of my past. I remember when I was at school and the class finished, I knew there were sometimes 3 to 4 guys older than me waiting for me in the schoolyard to beat me up. And I knew very well that I didn't have any chance against these guys. They were much stronger than me and older than me at the time. And I needed to find a way to avoid them. And sometimes it was impossible. They were waiting for me. So they beat me up. And not only did they beat me up, they really humiliated me. Mm-hmm. In a way that it left perhaps a scar in my mind. And maybe that's why I'm doing martial art. Not only at first as a self-defense, but maybe it's a therapy for me now because it's a confidence problem. I like to walk in a room knowing that if something happened, I can take care of business. And I know very well that sometimes if I have an injury, I don't feel the same confidence in myself. What I mean is, because I had that past experience, at the time I did not understand it. It was a very negative experience because it was very uncomfortable. But now I know very well that because I had that bullying experience, it helped me later on in my career. It turns out into a positive thing because now in my sport, there's a lot of mind game. There's a lot of mental warfare. And it's a very egotistic sport. So every time I fight someone, he's trying to intimidate me. But because of what I've lived through before in my life, it's very hard now to get inside my head. Because first, it's only one guy in front of me. And if I'm fighting you, it's because I think I'm better than you. So, and there's a referee also. So I've lived through worse thing in the past.
Right.
The worst thing that can happen is I zig when I should have zagged and I get knocked out. I mean, it's a terrible thing. I don't wish I didn't want. I didn't ever wish it for myself and anybody I love. But I believe the fact that I was bullying when I was young helped me to deal with the mental warfare I had to face and the intimidation I had to face in my career later on. So now I know it's a positive thing.
Yeah, I feel the same way about my work, and I'll bring it around so it makes sense. But it's about 105 degrees outside, and I used to do construction all day long. And when it was this hot, it was just miserable because you couldn't get out of the sun and nothing was ever air conditioned. And it was always hot and dusty and miserable. And you basically, when the weather's this way, I grew up here. So when the weather's this way, you're out doing all the stuff you don't want to do in this weather, which is right. Hanging drywall and moving sheets of plywood and digging ditches and stuff. And then when it comes now to podcasting, I go, that's not work, because I know what work is. I used to do work. This doesn't feel like work. And then sometimes people go, why do you do so much work? I go, this isn't work, because I used to. I know what work is. And so for you, it's kind of the same thing, your business, my business, which is you had a past. You know what the past is. That was outnumbered and no referees and guys that were in higher weight divisions than you. And this is referee one-on-one. Yeah. Same weight division.
And I didn't have the training and the knowledge that I have, you know, to defend myself. So now it's much easier because of, you know what I mean? So I believe what doesn't kill you and make you stronger. You know, every obstacle that you're able to step over, you know, to face and overcome it, it could leave a scar and change you forever, for the good or for the worse. But it makes you better in a way.
Well, let's talk a little current UFC. Just popped my head. I mean, everyone's always talking about John Jones now and Francis Ngannou. Mm-hmm. And Francis is so big, but John is so skilled. And really probably the only guy in the UFC has just really never been beaten, essentially.
Yeah.
I think he has a disqualification loss or something like that. But it's not really. No one's ever really beat him. But then Francis is such a wrecking machine and such a physical specimen. I know John, his frame can hold more weight and he's putting on muscle and all that kind of stuff. But how do you see a fight like that going?
Well, yeah, it's hard because John never fought at heavyweight. And there's a big gap between light heavyweight. It's 205. And now we know that, like, for example, Francis Ngannou is the limit for the heavyweight is 260 pounds. And Francis, I believe, is like 270. He's heavier. He has to cut down for the heavyweight division. So it's hard to tell because, yes, size does matter, but skills always beat size. So the question is, of course, John, I believe, has more experience. Maybe he's more well-rounded in a way because he had more experience. He had more times to develop his skills than Francis. Francis arrived quite recently in the sport. I don't know how this fight will go.
It's kind of the beauty of the UFC, which is nobody, you know, I follow it closely. You lived it for so many years, and yet no one has any idea how this fight would go, which is a very interesting. You know, when one of the Williams sisters, Venus or Serena Williams, is playing some spindly chick from the Czech Republic in tennis, we know how it's going to go. You know how it's going to go. The ultimate thing you could say about a sport, you know, you can say it on the Super Bowl sometimes, which is I have no idea how this is going to go. I don't know who would be favored. Francis probably be a little bit favored. It might just be even.
It's always a question of odds, but there are so many things that can influence the odds. And what people don't understand is it's like in basketball or baseball, it's not the best team that win the game. It's the team that play the best the night of the game.
Right.
So even on paper, if one guy is better than the other one, it always comes down to who will fight the best the night of the fight.
Yeah, who shows up?
I've lost personally in my career, and I personally believe that I was better than that guy. But that night, I zig when I should have zag, and this can happen. So if you make that fight, Francis Ngannou versus John Jones, maybe 10 times in 10 different locations and 10 different places and times, we might see different outcomes every single time. Yeah. So that's why it doesn't mean if you win a fight one night that you always gonna win the fight. So people have the tendency to think that, oh, he's the strongest man in the world. There is no such thing as the strongest man in the world, because it's a question of style. Style makes fight. Sometimes you have the perfect style to be the perfect nemesis to that particular person, but that person will beat another person that will beat you. So who's the best guy? It's like it's a question of style. That's what fighting.
Yeah, no, I was just watching. I was talking about on yesterday's podcast, The Kings. I think it was about Roberto Duran and Hagler and Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard.
Oh, the golden age of
boxing. The golden age of boxing. And boy, they went at it. There was no business decisions. Nobody was trying to get paid and go home. They'd never stop trading, sometimes up to 15 rounds. But you could never – so you'd have Hearns completely dispatch of Roberto Duran.
I mean,
he demolished Roberto Duran.
Yeah.
And so you go, all right, now Hearns is going to fight Sugar Ray Leonard, who lost to Roberto Duran. So imagine what Hearns is going to do to – Leonard, and then Leonard takes him out in the 14th round. Like, it just
in Montreal. That was where I come from.
Yeah, there's no straight linear math.
That's right.
On that. I always talk about Muhammad Ali had a hard time with Joe Frazier.
That's right.
A very hard time with Joe Frazier. George Foreman destroyed Joe Frazier.
Exactly.
Destroyed him. I mean, knocked him out maybe six, knocked him down six or seven times. I was lifting him up off the ground with punches, you know. So now you go, well, then what's Muhammad Ali going to do with Foreman? That's never going to work.
That's right.
He takes out Foreman.
Yeah.
That's the beauty. That's the styles making the fights.
Yeah. And sometimes it's very hard to predict. Even the so-called expert cannot even predict it. But that's why we're running it, we're doing it, you know, because it would be boring if we would know the outcome every single time.
You had a big, I don't know if it was your last fight. I think it was your last fight where you took out Michael Bisping.
Yes.
That was a great fight, because I think you'd been off for a little while and he was considered probably a favorite in that fight. He's bigger.
Yeah.
He's a big guy.
Yeah. He fought even in the division above in the weight class that he was champion. So.
And he's a big talker too.
Yeah, he's actually a very nice guy.
He seems like a nice guy, but he does do a lot of talking.
I remember that night; it was crazy. When I got to the Madison Square Garden, I had some of my teammate that was fighting on the same card as me. When I got to the, because I'm the main event, I got later in my locker room at Madison Square Garden, and I remember my locker room was cursed. Everybody, all my teammates got knocked out, demolished. So I got into my locker room. And
they're all sharing the locker room?
Oh, yeah. We normally, they tend to put people from the same team in the same locker room, or people from the same country in the same locker room. And it's like a sort of a camaraderie thing. So when one guy goes out to fight, we applaud and go, go, go. And then he comes back with the win. We're like, yeah, one and over for us. And then that's how it goes. But that night, I felt like I was going to a funeral. It was insane. And I start thinking, it's like, damn, maybe my locker room is cursed. And it was crazy. And it's unbearable, the stress. I never enjoyed it. I never liked to fight. I like what it brings me, the freedom, the money, the fame, the access of things that most people do not have. But I never enjoyed that. I did it because I was just very good at it. And I remember that night, it was crazy. So what happened, and when you talk about how to deal with stress and fear, that's how
this is 2017.
Yes.
I think Bisping just beats
Luke Rockhold, and he beat Dan Anderson.
He was kind of flying high.
Yeah.
He had a sort of so-so kind of middle of his career, and then he started to come on
That's right.
and get some momentum at the end. And again, He's probably 3 inches taller than you and walks around 25 pounds heavier.
Yeah, he's bigger. He's a bigger guy and very skilled too. So I was very nervous and very scared, you know.
Were you coming off a layoff?
I was coming off a long layoff for more than 4 years. I came back and I wanted to came back to do something different because I used to compete at 170 pounds all my career. So I came back and one of my coach says, George, you had two major critics in your career. One of it is that you fight too much like a robot. You know, you don't take enough risk. You're not emotional enough. And you never went up a weight class to challenge the champion. He says, why, if you ever come back, why don't you address these two things? And I said, you know what? Let's do it. And that's why I came back. And also, they used to have big problem with steroids and drugs back in the day. And that's the major reason why I stopped and I took a long layoff because I didn't want to compete against a guy who was doping. And I'm glad the UFC took the initiative to change. They hire USADA to do drug tests, and we saw what happened. Like, a lot of their stars fall. And it was crazy. They had to cancel many events, and they lost a lot of money. They were probably pissed. But I always believe that at the long term, it would make the sport shine, especially in fighting. Because you can say, I play baseball, I play hockey, I play basketball, but you don't play fighting. So if you cheat, it's like a weapon, you know? Right. It's crazy because it can affect. If you lose in baseball, it affect maybe your record, your paycheck. But if you lose in fighting, it can affect your well-being, your health, because the damage that you get in a fight might create your death down the road.
Right.
So it's something that we need to take very seriously. So
who,
that's why I came
back.
Who
are some of the guys they got?
Oh, many of the champion, they had like a lot of John Jones, Anderson Silva, a lot of guys, like a lot of the big stars fell, you know, like, and it was very sad at the beginning because, you know, like, you know what I mean? It's always sad, you know, and I don't wish nobody any bad lucks, you know, it's there for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, if you use performance enhancing drug, it makes a huge difference, because I know for a fact, because I personally train with guys that I know are on performance enhancing drug, and they told me, and I can see the difference when I'm training with them, when they are on their cycle and when they are off. It's not even the same guy.
Really?
It's incredible. Just look the result of the Tour de France.
Tour de France.
It's huge. It makes a huge difference. And in fighting, it's unacceptable. You know, it's a martial art. It's all about virtue, respect.
Right.
If you do that, you break the code.
So you're back there. How many of your guys lose in the undercard that are coming back to your locker room?
I think it was three to four guys that lost. So I was freaking out. I was like, I was so scared. But the thing is with fighting is it's like a superhero, I would say, like Peter Parker and Spider-Man, you know, like Bruce Wayne and Batman. So I'm Georges St-Pierre. I don't like to fight, you know. And before a fight, I'm extremely uncomfortable and terrified. But when I start to warm up in the locker room, something happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
There's a change, a psychological change. Because when I hit the pad with my coaches, I remember the mechanic. And I remember that I'm pretty good at this thing. So my confidence grows. And I become a different person, a different animal. So when you start warming up, the fear kind of disappear. And I have a ritual before every fight. I go in the bathroom and I look at myself in front of the mirror. And I try to compliment myself out loud and telling every reason why I'm going to win the fight. I'm stronger than him. He might be bigger than me, but I'm way more skilled. I'm faster, more powerful. My fighting IQ is better. I've done so many sacrifices that I'm sure he never did to get there. I deserve this. I'm in perfect shape. I got a great team. I went through hell in this training camp, and I tried to build myself up. So when the UFC guy come in the locker room, say, St. Pierre, you're up next. Are you ready? I go in the bathroom to do that ritual. Then a few minutes after, I get out. I'm a different person. I'm no longer Georges St-Pierre. I'm GSP. Then I go fight. I'm on cruise control. I go fight. Then after the fight, the pressure fall. Then I come back as Georges St-Pierre.
Boy, how good. A couple things. This is a personal thing for me. I hate getting to places early and having to just sit there and be nervous for long periods of time. Like, I don't like doing it for any kind of performing. It's I did the Golden Gloves once. I must have got there 8 hours before I did the Golden Gloves. It was the worst 8 hours of my life, just pacing around, warming up, then sitting back down again. It was torture, you know. And now you get there.
Yeah.
You want to support your teammates, essentially.
Well, I didn't get there until later because I was the main event. But some of my teammates already fought. And they, I remember my my coaches did not want to tell me because one of my teammates actually really got knocked out bad. Like, it's one of the highlights of the UFC. He got knocked out with a spinning elbow, like knocked out like a he fall down like a
rag
like
doll.
like a cadaver, you know. Right. Like, it was bad, and they didn't want to tell me. So I found out once I got there because I saw the replay on the screen. I was like, "Oh shoot!" I was like, "I hope he's all right." It terrified me, and yeah, it was a crazy night. But at the end, it ended up being a good ending.
Yeah, how good is there any better feeling? I'm only doing it in small part because I know what it's like to finish that show or to get out of the race car and have won or whatever that feeling is, where it's like it's the best. It's joy, which everyone always talks about, the joy of winning or being victorious. But there's so much relief involved with it. And joy in and of itself is great. You open a package, got a beautiful gift in it, or it's a birthday or something. Good. Your team won. Fine. But that relief thing is even bigger than the joy. And when you take the joy and the relief, put them together, you got a Reese's peanut butter cup.
I believe it's because you go through so much sacrifice and so much stress that when you win the fight, it's like you say, it's a relief. But it's a joy, so it makes it even bigger. And it's a little bit, if I can make an analogy for the audience to understand, is the same thing. Let's say we go to a restaurant, you and me, and I've been fasting for 3 days. And you just ate your breakfast before to get to the restaurant. Even if we eat the same meal, my meal will taste so much better than yours because I've been fasting for so long. And fighting is a little bit the same thing. So you've been through so many sacrifices during your training camp and your preparation. So when the fight is over and you win, it feels just so damn good.
I want to get more into that Bisping fight and just I'll tell everyone that George won a third round submission. Take a quick break. We'll be right back with Georges St-Pierre right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
Hey, it's Eric Stromer.
Hey, it's kind of my thing.
Hey, I'm going to... All right, sorry. Hi, I'm Eric Stromer.
Let's not live in the past. You should listen to Ace on the House because me and Stromer dispense building advice every Saturday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
I might even go as far as to say professional building advice.
Hey, get me some coffee.
There you go. I mean, here I go. I'm running.
Ace on the House every Saturday on Corolla Digital. Download now at adamcarolla.com, the Podcast One app, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Ace on the House.
All right. So Madison Square Garden, I mean, what a not many venues have more history than Madison Square Gardens. So many big so many huge prize fights there over the, I don't know, 75-year, 100-year history, whatever it is. You make the walk out. Bisping's in there. He's big, and he's kind of on a roll. And you've moved up a weight division, right? You go from 170 to 185 in that fight?
That's right.
And you get in. What now? All right, couple things. Some nights are just off nights. Like some days are just off days. If you think about just your average day, sometimes people are just like not feeling it, a little sluggish, whatever the reason. They try to chalk it up to a bunch of stuff, like I didn't sleep good last night, or I drank too much, or whatever it is. But some days are just off days. You're just not who you're not as good as you would be on the next day. Do you ever have any experience where you go out for the first round and you physically think to yourself, "Oh, I'm not having this. Is not one of my better days." And then can you turn it around if you have that feeling
every single morning? When I wake up the day of the fight, I do not sleep well. I always feel like, man, I don't feel good today. However, it's normal because it's the stress. Because I know I'm about to live a crazy experience at night. And I think it's a way for my body to prepare itself. I understand it better now than I used to it. Because when I was young, I was going through this, and I used to think that perhaps with time, it will go away because I'm going to get used to it. But it does not. The only thing that happens is you accept it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I will not sleep well the night. I mean, I'm saying the night, the week before the fight. Because it's so much stress. To me, it's the stress is unbearable. I'm constantly running through scenarios. So, okay, if you do this, I'm going to do this. And sometimes when a thought comes in my mind, I see myself winning and sometimes I don't. However, the trick that I have is I never let it finish on a negative note. If I have a flashback of what my upcoming fight and I see myself in a bad situation, I'm always going to force myself to finish my thought on a positive note. And it's driving me crazy, especially the week of the fight. It's insane. So every day, every fight day, I never feel 100%. Never. And never. The only day that I felt not so, that I felt kind of good, it was when I first fought Matt Serra and I got knocked out. So it's not a good thing. And I have learned that it's normal to be afraid. And the fact that I'm nervous and afraid, I believe it increased my reaction time, my decision-making time. It makes me more explosive. And it's a way to my body to prepare itself for this extreme experience.
Can you tell 30 seconds in or with your first clash or two of your opponent if they're strong, if they're quick, if they're sharp?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, is there a feeling of when I used to play football, even when I played peewee football, I'd play on the line and they'd just have a guy in front of you and it'd be the same guy basically in front of you the entire game. And after the first snap of the first ball at the beginning of the game, you'd fire out, you'd hit this guy, and you'd know immediately, like, this is going to be a super long day. Yeah. This guy's really strong, or I think I got this guy. I'm feeling good. I still have to do my job, but I've sized him up. Could you feel that in your first few clashes with an opponent?
Well, when you clash with him, it's always, normally it's the first time because you never, you know, clash with him before. There's different kinds of strength. For example, I've fought guys that were very strong. They were pushing me against the fence and I felt they were so damn strong. I felt some guys that were so strong in terms of squeezing.
Mm-hmm.
I felt some guys that they were not necessarily strong, but they were very fast, like BJ Penn. I punched him. He was like behind me. I was like, Mike, he was so fast. I felt some guys that were so flexible and they're very agile, you know, it's which is different kinds of physical attribute. Everybody has different kinds of strength. And there's not only one type of strength, because maybe if you're strong at squeezing, maybe you're not very strong at pushing, you know, mm-hmm. There's different kinds of strength. Everybody is different. Everybody has their gift. So the key is, yes, when you have the first clash with someone, I think what makes the best fighter is their ability to adapt and become the perfect nemesis to their opponent. To take their opponent outside of their comfort zone and make them fight where you are strong. I've never been the best at any particular thing. However, I'm very good and very competent in every areas. So because of that, I'm also very good at analyzing someone. So when I fight someone, I'm very good at becoming that the perfect nemesis to take my opponent outside of his comfort zone and fight him where I'm the strongest. In a way, you want, you know, it's more complicated than that, but you want to strike the wrestler and wrestle the striker, so to speak.
So Matt Hughes was a great champion, a great wrestler. So you want to strike with him. Bisping probably a better striker. So you want to grapple more with him?
Well, Bisping was very complicated problems because I knew Bisping was taller than me. So one of my strategy was that's what I used to knock him down in the third round. Freddie, we work a lot on the fact that because he's taller than me.
Freddie Roach?
Yeah, Freddie Roach. Because he's taller than me, he has to punch down. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning of my combination, when I get in, I can make myself smaller and coming, starting to the body and goes to the top. Because by doing this, it will make him punch down. And when you're taller and you're punching down, you're wide open. Mm-hmm. If you're like me, you're smaller than him and you're punching up.
You're covered.
You're covered.
Right.
So I used that against him. And that's how I dropped him. I started a combo to the body and I finished with a left hook to the head. And I dropped him. Then when he got down, I knew he was very, very good at standing back up once he's on the floor. But I knew also by studying his tape that when he stand up, he gives up. Is back a lot. So there is no perfect technique in the world of martial art. There's always a compromise. So I know he's very good at standing up, but he has to give up his back. So I kind of let him the opening to stand up because he was stunned, but I tried to finish him and he was very resilient. I wasn't able to finish him with strike. So I knew that if I leave him an opening, he would have taken it. So he tried to stood up, but he gave up his back. And that's when I went and take his back and choke him out.
Chris, we have footage of that. I want to see that. I remember watching the fight, but it's kind of nice to hear it from such a technical point of view and also have those thoughts and that.
What I'm talking about, we've drilled it for hundreds and hundreds of time,
but you knew training. Specifically it would be
yeah, you
for
see body.
For him.
Then I go to the head. Then right. I try to knock him out. You know,
with like, elbows, left
yeah.
elbows.
And then I see I wasn't able. That oh, now you see he's about to stand. I give him an opening to stand up, and I got his back. So that was all planned. That's people they don't see it like that because a lot of people they go there just to see a fight and people right. hitting each other. But there's right. a lot of technical stuff into this. You
right.
see,
he knew he'd go to his yeah.
to stand up. He liked to go on his knees and stand up on his four limbs because he's very strong. So I knew he exposed his back. So I use a technique called the mataleão in Portuguese. It's called killing the lion. It's a choke, and mm-hmm. he refuses to tap, so he passed out.
Did he pass out?
Yes, he did. Yes.
Yeah,
and the crazy thing is when you passed out on a choke, it's not like in a movie. And I was a doorman for a long time, and I used that technique very often because it's my favorite technique. It doesn't leave any scars, and you know it doesn't hurt people. So when you choke someone and he passed out, his eyes stays open like a dead man. However, when he become limp, you have to let him go. If you keep holding on the choke, I believe after 30 or 45 seconds, he can leave permanent damage to the brain. Mm-hmm. And you have to make sure, of course, he has nothing in his mouth to
swallow.
But
you can just feel the body go.
Yes, exactly. But it looks terrible, but it's not as dangerous. I mean, I would rather get choked out than get knocked out. There's a lot less damage.
Lasting damage.
Yes, exactly.
And you know when the choke is in deep. I mean, you know when you have the choke.
Well, once it is locked in, there's not much he can do.
Right.
And if he wants to escape, he need to do it before it's locked in.
Right. So once it's locked in, if he's not tapping, he knows it's locked in.
Yes.
It just means he's just going to be put to sleep.
That's right. He went out on his shield.
Yeah. But there's something pretty incredibly noble about knowing that.
Yeah. I got caught in a submission before, and in a fight, one of my loss, I got in a arm bar, but I tapped. I prefer to save myself for another day.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to tap on an arm
bar. Yeah, because your arm might never... Yes. And I even tapped when I got TKO against Matt Serra, because I knew I was so dizzy. I got blamed because people like, oh, he's a quitter. He tap on strike. In MMA, that's a big thing. People think, oh, you tap on strike. But I always believe that because it's a sport. We're not there. We're not on a battlefield like a soldier. I love my life. I don't want to die. And I rather save myself for another day. Be a man and say, hey, you won today. You were the better man. But I might get back in a few weeks or a few years and we'll run it back. See if you're still better than me, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of opponents, Matt Hughes had this crazy car accident where he was hit by a train in a car and suffered brain damage. And I remember the story, I think, from 2017. I think he's rehabbing slowly but steadily. But it was a freakish accident. I think he was out in some rural area. There was no train crossing lights and the corn was up high, and I guess he couldn't see the train and literally got hit. So first off, everyone's always worried about what's going to happen to you in the ring, and that makes sense. But most of the shit that happens to you when you're driving or getting out of the bathtub.
Yes.
You know, I mean, sadly.
There's life. There's a lot of risk. That's why when someone comes to me with his kids and say, it happens to me a lot, and I'm sure it happens to a lot of athletes, and they comes to me with their kids and say, hey, George, this is my son. He's the future world champion. Which advice would you give him? I always look at the kid and I say, you go to school? I say, yeah. I'm like, yeah, be good at school. This is your number one priority. And the parent always look at me weird. And I'm thinking, it's not because I made it, I'm going to tell your kid to choose the same path. Because like you just mentioned, he can get hit by a car. And if you get hit by a car, maybe you're going to break his legs and he won't be able to. You know, there are so many things in life that can influence the path of someone. And the odds of success are so low. We only hear about the people who make it. And I'm talking not only about fighting. I'm talking about baseball, basketball, soccer, name it. It's the same thing. So, yes, I'm telling the kid, stay at school. It's like an assurance. If you want, do sport. Make it big. Try to go for your goal. Try to reach it. But at least if it doesn't work, and when you're in late, I don't know, 20s or 30s, if you put all your eggs in the same basket, you have nothing that you can fall back into. Your life is over. But if you do stay in school, at least you have something that like an assurance. And I think it's very important, you know. I had an assurance. I was at school. When I make the decision to quit school, it was because I had my first championship fight against Matt Hughes.
You were talking about college at this point, right?
Yes. And I was studying in university. I was in kinesiology. People don't know that there's a stereotype in our sport that believe like, oh, we're all from the street. But I was studying and I didn't know, like any young people, I didn't know what I really wanted to do, because I think you're not the same person at 15 years old that you will be at 20 and 25 and 30. You change. So I was at school basically because of my parent, because they always pushed me to be at school, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. And when I first saw the UFC, I had a dream and I want to achieve. I achieve it. So I was working towards that goal to become a champion, but I was at school. So if something would have happened to me, like, I don't know, in a car accident, I break my legs and I cannot ever have the career that I had. And this is, that happened. At least I would have had something I can fall back into. And maybe you don't know, like me, I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like, I wanted to be a fighter, but it's kind of an unreal job, you know. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but now I know right now, because I'm 40 years old, I know that if I would not have been a fighter, I would have perhaps be a paleontologist. Because I developed it since I'm a kid, but I didn't know until later in my life that was I wanted to do. And I went to school in aeronautics, but the tower fell, then the market went down, I changed. I went to kinesiology, but I didn't really liked it. And it's normal when you're young to not knowing what you wanted to become, because you will change during your life. You won't be the same person in 5 years that you are now. And it's okay, but at least stay there, you know, grind it, you know, hang in there. One day maybe something will happen and you'll have a vision and you'll be like, that's what I want to become.
A positive, uplifting note to go out on with George St. Pierre. Who knew the man's intellect? You should be, I'm assuming you're doing motivational speaking.
A little bit sometimes.
And if not, you should be doing more of it. The miniseries, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and 6 episodes available now on Disney+. And you can shoot George a tweet at George St. Pierre, ends with an S. Everyone says George, but got an S on the end there, as well. And a website, gspofficial.com. This has been a really interesting dialogue. I appreciate it, George.
All right, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, oh, by the way, I'm going to be in Golden, Colorado this Friday, Saturday, living out my childhood dreams. Maybe a few tickets left, live pod there, stand-up coming up in Anchorage. How would you say Anchorage with your accent, George?
Anchorage.
Oh, man. That was super boring.
Enchourage.
There you go. That's
Enchourage.
I will be there at Coots July 3rd. And you just go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows. Until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Gina Grad and Bob Bryan and George St. Pierre saying mahalo.
Oh, yeah. I've been kind of a shithead.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Catch Gina Grad on the podcast Easy Listening. Bald Brian on the podcast The Film Vault. And the rest of us turkeys on the water cooler. Get tickets to see the Ace Man. Get them now. They're going fast. You can get yours at AdamCarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, movie lovers. Who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.